This is Audible.
Apocalypse Regression, Book 4, written by Charles Dean and R. A. Mejia, performed by Daniel Wisniewski and Elizabeth Plant. Chapter 1. Nick Gallows hadn't been able to take his eyes off the 10 rookie training session from the moment he walked in the door. He couldn't put his finger on it, but something about it was off. It was a simple skirmish, or it should have been, of 5 guildmates versus 5 guildmates, with Lorenzo, one of their promising new members, overseeing the fight as the two teams, one led by Maria, squared off against each other. For the current match, just like the one before it, Maria's team was winning. That much was clear. Maria's black hair streamed behind her as she sprinted across the clearing behind the guild building as she raced to the other team's leader. Maria's superior strength was evident as she used her shield like a battering ram to knock her opponent back into a tree with a crunch, the leader slumping to the ground. Maria's 4 teammates lagged, clearly winded at trying to keep up with her frenzied pace. However, she just immediately charged into the next fight, taking on 2 opponents at once. She growled as the wooden axe of one opponent hit her side. She deflected the sword point of the other opponent with her shield before using her aura blade to knock both rookies onto their backs. The attacks were fast and brutal, and their seamless succession had knocked the 3 enemy teammates out before the fight had even gotten a chance to really begin. Still, Nick couldn't help but feel something was off.
"She's not circling around them properly. She has the advantage, but she's just attacking in a beeline right at each of her opponents without considering the terrain. If they were as good as she was, she wouldn't make headway nearly as fast, and she might even lose the momentum,"
Spencer commented as he adjusted his glasses, putting Nick's agitated thoughts into words as he walked up next to Nick to join him in observing the training.
"Yeah, she doesn't seem to understand how to flank," Nick sighed. "Ugh, and she's supposed to be their leader.
Has Lorenzo not explained it? Does he not know how to flank either? What if that were a large monster? If she can't set up a flank, it's going to be very hard for her to tackle A and B tier bosses in the future."
Spencer nodded.
But at least her combat skills have grown just as fast as her strategic reasoning skills have shrunk.
Is it okay to say that about your own teammate, your classmate, and your close friend? Nick asked, looking over at Spencer, who was staring at Maria. He knew how much Spencer cared for her as a close friend, so the fact that he was being so blunt and brutally honest about her faults showed how concerned he was about her.
"Is she still upset about her graduation dungeon run?"
"Yeah. When Adele took MVP, but Maria was nearly disqualified twice, it really hit her hard," Spencer sighed. "I had thought, given we still won first place, that she'd have gotten over it by now. But I guess I was wrong."
"Was it the first time she lost so badly?" Nick asked. "To someone besides you," Spencer answered.
"I think she thought that, because she trained with you, she was like you. She bit off more than she could chew in several fights and didn't do adequate research on the enemies, and we ended up facing some iron golems that were resistant to physical attacks. She didn't do a great job defending us either. I even died during the boss fight and was teleported away."
"I see." Nick leaned back on his heels as he rocked a little and tried to think of what to do.
"This is a problem. I think it's because I spent so long preparing everything for the dungeon she goes into that I forget she needs to actually do the preparing part."
Spencer nodded again.
"Yeah, she didn't even bring a backpack."
Nick's eyes shot open.
"What?" "Not a single packed item. She said it was only a 1-day dungeon, so we wouldn't need rations and—"
"What?"
Nick couldn't contain his anger. "The backpack wasn't just a preparation for the coming fight. It was a preparation for all fights. Nick never went to a dungeon or even left home without it. Even his backpack for school up until graduation had been loaded with worst-case scenario items just in case the apocalypse started earlier than expected."
It's just a...
"I swear, Spencer, if you tell me it's just a backpack, I'm throwing you into the next 5 versus 5 round, and I'm leaving you there until you get MVP on your own team without using magic," Nick threatened. This caused Spencer's eyes to open wider in surprise. He clearly wasn't expecting Nick to go off on him for such a simple comment.
"Do you seriously not understand the importance of the backpack? Even an empty backpack is worth more than most items. It is your inventory system. After your first slot at level 1, you only get a single item slot in your actual inventory every 10 levels. That means at level 100, you're barely sitting at 10 inventory slots. The backpack can triple or quadruple that, depending on how you pack it. In a world where you must manage rations, switch equipment in and out, prepare concoctions and healing agents, bring specialized tools, and carry camping gear, that inventory space is the difference between life and death. It is your most valuable item, Nick lectured him.
I got it. The backpack is holy, Spencer replied, throwing up his arms in defense.
But she's about to begin another round. Are you sure you don't want to say anything to her first?
Nick's mouth contorted to one side and then the other as he pondered for a second.
You know what?
No,
Nick answered.
She needs to figure this one out on her own. I've tried to explain to her 100 times, and she still hasn't learned.
I think maybe we're going about this the wrong way.
Let's get Lorenzo over here and switch out the teams.
What are you thinking of doing? Spencer asked.
How about you go down there, and you, Adele, and the strongest 3 people you can find take the place of the rookies currently fighting against Maria's team.
Can I at least use magic? Spencer asked.
Use whatever you want.
Just don't lose, Nick replied.
Maybe because my hopes are so high for Maria, I've failed her. She needs to understand the despair of defeat down to her bones.
You know that look on your face when you say that?
You kind of look like a villain,
Spencer commented as he gave Nick a very concerned look.
Since Maria is the hero class and I'm sending my goons out to defeat her, I think that does make me the villain,
Nick laughed, patting Spencer on the back. Now go, and don't let me down. It took a moment for Spencer to flag down Lorenzo, halting the next sparring match just in time. Afterward, the teams were quickly shuffled as Spencer, Adele, and 3 spear users with shields quickly formed up into a row of 3, followed by a row of 2, with the 3 shield-using spear-wielding guild members defending Spencer and Adele by creating a wall as the 2 mages stood behind them. When the battle started, Maria followed the same pattern of aggression that she had been sticking to, charging out in front of her team as she rushed the middle of the 3 meat shields protecting the mages. But this time, she didn't reach him. Before she even got close, Spencer's glowing hands had already finished the somatic component of his spell, and with a single word, the magic was activated. Chains of ice snapped up from the ground, wrapping themselves around Maria's arms, binding her in place before she could even swing her sword once. The attack left her completely vulnerable, her teammates nowhere near her to provide support as 2 of the spearmen rushed forward to take advantage of the spell. Without even struggling, they stabbed her exposed chest, taking her out of the fight before retreating to their position.
No, no! What the hell, Spencer?
Maria raged as she sat down in place to signify her part in combat was over. Then Spencer's ice magic slowly froze and trapped the other members 1 at a time, holding them still to be killed by the coordinated spears. The next round was an equally quick defeat for Maria. She charged headlong towards Spencer, but he simply threw up a stone wall with blunted spikes. Maria crashed through it, taking several hits to the protective armor she was wearing that would have been fatal wounds had the spikes been pointed, forcing her to sit down yet again in defeat. The third round didn't go any better, as Adele was able to disable Maria before Spencer even moved a muscle, her holy magic exploding in a light spell that blinded Maria while Spencer formed a lance of fire that would have killed her instantly in a real fight. As the fourth match went off, Maria was pinned down by Spencer with a flurry of ice needles, and then Adele waved a hand. A giant, glowing, semi-translucent hammer appeared above Maria and destroyed her on the spot. Nick could start to see the despair sinking in. The 5th, 6th, and 7th matches were no different. Every fight was the same, Maria losing over and over again like some bad parody of Groundhog Day, dying again and again to lightning, gravity magic, and even just a coordinated attack by the spearmen. She was forever losing because it never even occurred to her that her team could help her. It wasn't until the 20th or 21st time, Nick had lost count somewhere after 10, that Maria finally waited for her teammates to go with her, no longer charging ahead like she was invincible.
Unfortunately, even as she managed to take out a single opponent, she failed to press the advantage, and while she and one of her comrades were fighting one spearman, her other allies were quickly defeated until it was just her left, and she was bound and finished off in the same brutal fashion that she had lost so many times before.
All right, stop, Nick said, waving his own hand in defeat as he walked over to the fighting groups. He couldn't take it anymore.
I can go again,
Maria protested as she picked herself up, wiping away the sweat and trying to straighten out her back as she adjusted herself for the next fight.
I got closer this round. I can win next time. I feel it.
Nick shook his head as he stared down at her. The only thing you'll be able to do next time is disappoint me. This seemed to crush Maria as she stared back at him. It was one of the few moments that Nick thought he could feel his charisma at work, adding an extra blow to the verbal punch he had dealt her. Initially, he hadn't meant to be that harsh, but he just couldn't hide how much seeing Maria fail to grow bothered him. They only had a little bit of time to train for the guild raid on the Ecto Sanctuary dungeon, the first beginner-friendly guild raid he'd organized for the new guild, and she couldn't even manage a 5-person team properly, much less the 25 people she'd need to lead on raid day. No, she can't lead at this rate, Nick frowned, looking over at Spencer. But maybe he could. Nick already knew he had several great leaders among the veteran players, people like Lorenzo, Mac, and Yukiko, who all came with their own 5 or 6-man groups and all had years of experience leading dungeon dives. It was why they were so good at what they did and why they knew how to lead well and how to organize their members well. But he had no leaders among the upstarts of the guild. He had pinned his hopes on Maria, wishing that she would take up the mantle and become the amateur group's raid leader. But after this display, he thought maybe that wasn't a good idea. However, as quickly as the idea of her not being the best leader entered his head, it made its way out. He thought back to the apocalypse. Once she had cast aside her ego, once she had become the actual hero the world needed, she was unrivaled. She had led small squadrons to large armies into battles that were unwinnable and helped not only Nick but most of the others come out alive. Stop for now. Get some exercise in and clear your head. We'll pick this up again after lunch, Nick said to Maria, turning and walking away from the guild members who had just been skirmishing. At least she figured out how to wait for her team eventually, Spencer remarked in Marie's defense as he followed Nick quickly.
Yeah, she didn't do that badly. Try not to be so mean.
Adele chimed in as she tugged on a lock of her strawberry blonde hair and joined the two on their walk toward the weightlifting section of the gym. Chapter 2. Rosemary swept a stray strand of red hair away as she watched her target, her emerald green eyes narrowing as she focused her energy and emotions into a single point at the tip of her sword, her blade exploding with a blast of lightning as she struck at her opponent.
You're still too weak.
The word struck Rosemary harder than the flat of her mother's sword as the merciless matron smacked the blade into the girl's side, taking the air out of her before sending her body skidding 30 feet across the sand and into the wall.
I'm sorry, mother,
Rosemary replied as she got to her feet. She thought she had gotten better, her magic coalescing faster and her sword movements becoming more precise, but it still wasn't enough.
Don't make that pathetic face at me. You won't find any sympathy here.
Her mother replied as she wiped off her still pristine blade before beckoning at Rosemary to continue the bout.
If you had just managed to properly finish off the child during his graduation ceremony, then I wouldn't have to be so rough with you right now. You're the one making me do this. Your failures are the cause of your suffering, not me. I know,
Rosemary said, swallowing her emotions as she held the sword in front of her, once more focusing her magic onto her blade. After watching Nick at the graduation dungeon, she knew that her mother was right. She was too weak. She had no confidence that she could beat him or his companion Sioa in a fight.
Well, at least you removed that Evan boy from the list of competitors,
her mother added, as if it were just an afterthought. Rosemary didn't say anything this time, her stomach turning at the mention of her deed as the guilt swelled up inside of her. She could still vividly remember his cold, lifeless face, his father's unexpected emotional breakdown, his mother's wailing, and the tearful confusion of his friends as they struggled to figure out what to do.
Focus!
Her mother's voice cut through her thoughts as the back of the woman's sword swept her legs.
Rosemary failed to even attempt parrying the weapon as it knocked her legs out from under her and sent her falling flat on her back.
I swear, child, it's like you want me to hurt you. I'm sorry, Mother.
Rosemary repeated, standing back up and grabbing her weapon.
Don't say it. Show it.
Her mother's cold, emotionless voice warned as she came in for another attack. This time, Rosemary gave up on the lightning magic, focusing instead on just parrying her mother's blade. Even though she was successful, diverting the weapon's force to the side, her mother's frown let her know that it wasn't enough. Because she had given up on the magic part of the block, failing to turn the parry into an explosive, lightning-filled counterattack, her mother wasn't happy.
Why must you always disappoint me, child?
Her mother asked with a sigh as she backed up, preparing to begin the lessons again.
Don't apologize again. I hear that enough from your father.
Her mother said, raising her blade. She took position and got ready to attack again, only to lower her weapon a moment later. Rosemary's eyebrow rose as she studied her mother's changing face, the smile that rapidly covered her true emotions. Turning around, she saw the reason. Guests were here.
Oh, look at this, Rosemary.
Her mother said in a cheerful voice that more than unnerved the girl. The words held the perfect level of happiness, spoken with the perfect smile. The one Rosemary had always wished her mother would show her when it was just the two of them.
It seems two of your cousins have come to play with you. Why don't you go to the veranda, and I'll have one of the servants bring you some tea. Yes, Mother.
Rosemary said, wearing the same fake smile that her mother had just donned as she turned to greet her cousins, Miss Serafina and Lady Isolde.
Sorry for interrupting your training.
Serafina began before Rosemary's mother had even left.
We were just in the area and thought we'd stop by.
You don't have to apologize. Any chance to see you two is wonderful.
Rosemary assured them as she led the two women onto the veranda just as her mother had instructed her.
Though I must say, I can't imagine you'd come all the way out here just to stop by. Was there something on your mind?
More like someone.
Isolde answered first.
She won't stop talking about him.
It's not that serious.
Serafina insisted.
Oh, you make it sound like I have a crush or something.
Do you?
Isolde smirked.
Ew, no, he's my cousin.
Serafina answered.
Not close enough cousins to matter.
Isolde replied, obviously enjoying Serafina's squirming far more than Rosemary had imagined she would. The two had clearly become close during her stay in the States. Rosemary would have to be wary that their bond didn't interfere with her plans.
And here I thought it was only the nobles that liked to mix blood from the same pool. Or did I hear wrongly, Lady Isolde?
Rosemary asked, joining the fun as she took Serafina's side. From the delay following the question, this gentle jest had evidently caught Isolde off guard.
While I don't carry the same preconceptions as our sweet Serafina, it would be impossible to tell whether I could have a crush on him as we have yet to meet this cold and callous cousin of ours.
Rosemary noted the critical description of Nick, who had enjoyed a picnic immediately after learning of Evan's death and did not even bother to send the parents his condolences or make an appearance at the funeral. His behavior had shocked the rest of them as it felt like Nick had drawn a clear line in the sand between himself and his blood. Everyone knew of the history between the two men, but blood was blood, and a funeral was a funeral.
You still wish to meet him, even now?
She asked, raising an eyebrow and feigning surprise.
Yes, even now?
Isolde answered, her fingers tapping lightly on the table as she looked at Rosemary.
Serafina and I went by his parents' house today, and not only was he not there, but they wouldn't even give us his phone number. He's our cousin, and I came across the pond to see him, and he can't even spare me a moment. It's preposterous. I am the Lady Isolde, not some debt collector to avoid or some beggar seeking money for the latest tax fraud disguised as a charity fund. And why are you so eager to see him?
Rosemary asked.
Oh, that's...
Isolde, who had done much of the talking, stopped for a moment as she looked over at Serafina.
Let her explain it. Yes. Well, you see, the thing is...
Serafina tripped over her words for a moment before steadying herself.
The thing is, I found out about his condition. It's the one they say that killed Evan.
It's a poison, not a condition.
Isolde interjected, as if any of the three of them needed to be reminded of the fact that Evan didn't suffer a condition. He was poisoned with his own poison.
Right, the poison. I was researching it with Mother the other day, and she pointed out that, based on the resources Nick has had available to him, and the fact that he was able to gain access to that Bratva dungeon, then he is likely only short a single ingredient to fully cure himself. That's why he's been getting so strong so quickly.
Serafina explained.
What do you mean, he's only missing a single ingredient?
Rosemary, who had no aptitude for the alchemical trade, unlike her dear cousin Serafina, didn't understand how any ingredient could be that hard to buy if you had a fortune.
Exactly that,
Serafina replied.
He needs the devil's claw extract. Once he has that, he'll be able to mix it with the dragon blood he likely got from fighting the worm in Rome to produce the final cure he needs.
I don't understand. That flower is incredibly common. Why can't he just buy it at the store?
Rosemary asked.
Not that extract. The devil's claw extract. The one you can only get by processing the claws of the four-winged night splitter?
Serafina specified, dispelling all the confusion about why Nick hadn't been able to flex his money to get the ingredient. That particular monster only appeared in a remote Russian dungeon once every 2 years. There was no way that Nick was going to get it.
So now you understand why Serafina has wanted to meet him.
Isolde said, shrugging as she leaned back a little in her seat to leave ample room for the servant walking up behind her to set a cup of tea in front of her.
No, I still don't understand. Doesn't Nick likely already know all the ingredients he needs?
Rosemary responded, not understanding what Serafina could be offering here.
He might know those ingredients, but he won't know that there is a substitution possible. The devil's claw extract can be substituted with the feathers from an obsidian sky terror,
Serafina blurted out excitedly.
He can be cured!
Rosemary nearly failed to control her expression as she heard the words obsidian sky terror.
Yes,
she muttered, looking down at the bitter cup of Earl Grey tea that her servant had just brought her.
Yes, he can.
Rosemary took a sip of the tea. She knew it should have been the usually bitter flavor, but for some reason, today, it tasted sweet.
Yes, he can indeed. And that is why we wanted to meet him. We just wanted to tell him the good news before we lost another cousin,
Isolde explained.
After all, it would be a shame for him to die early like that rotten barnacle Evan that had stuck to him for so many years.
Rosemary would normally have replied, said something sweet or diplomatic, or tried to change the topic so she didn't accidentally offend someone by touching on such a sensitive subject as a relative's death. But she was too shocked by the news. All she could do was sip her tea as she did her best to maintain her composure. After taking a minute to collect herself and her thoughts, the three ladies quietly enjoying the evening, Rosemary stood up.
Well, this won't do at all,
she stated, a plan already forming in her mind.
What's that?
Serafina asked.
We shouldn't let Nick's issues with Evan, his grandfather, and clearly his parents prevent us from having a good relationship with him. We need to remedy this as soon as possible. If you want to meet him, we will meet him. We're going to meet him anyway at the competition. Is there a need to rush?
Isolde questioned, looking at her cup of tea as if abandoning it so prematurely would pain her.
Never put off for tomorrow what can be done today,
Rosemary insisted, extending a hand to Isolde and Serafina.
All right, then,
Isolde said with a shrug, giving up on her beverage.
I'm curious to see how you're going to pull this off.
Don't say that! If it's the three of us, there's no way we can't do it!
Serafina chirped happily as she stood up and clung onto Isolde's arm. Chapter 3
It's not fair!
Maria grumbled as the group sat down to eat lunch. Nick looked over at her. If there was one thing that was important, it was making sure that one had a good, well-balanced, protein-rich meal if they were going to stay active. Yet here Maria was, moping and ruining one of the most important moments of a person's physical regimen by continuing to make the same complaints she had made a dozen times while walking to the cafeteria at the guild building. Fine, I'll humor you, Nick replied, setting down his spoon as he leveled his gaze at her. What's not fair? She was his friend. In his past timeline, she had been his best friend, who had saved him a dozen times. But even with all of that, it was hard not to feel frustrated and disappointed with her, especially since the more he tried to teach her, the more she ignored the lessons and just tried to do things her own way.
You're acting like it's my fault that my team lost when I was the best combatant in the group. The only reason we kept losing is because magic combat skills are just so much more powerful than martial disciplines.
Maria explained, insisting on her innocence.
I gave it everything I had, but you're acting like everything is my fault.
Nick was flabbergasted as he listened to the excuse. What? You think martial combat skills are weaker than magic ones?
They are,
Maria asserted, folding her arms over her chest.
Adele and Spencer can both neutralize someone instantly on the battlefield from a distance. Even if I can finish someone off in one hit, I still have to get close. And...
No. No. Stop that thinking right there. That's like saying a sniper rifle is better than a shotgun. Sure, the sniper rifle can kill from a distance, but a shotgun can shoot someone through a wall without you even having to aim it, Nick said. Every weapon has its time and its place, including the weapons of a martial combat practitioner. If you talk like that again, I'm going to assign Elizabeth to handle all your training in the future. This caused Maria to balk as the color drained from her face.
No. You wouldn't dare.
I would, Nick insisted.
But even if you say that magic has its time and its place, isn't it always what wins against melee? Doesn't the mage defeat the knight and the knight defeat the rogue and the rogue defeat the mage and the rock, paper, scissors of old school class archetypes?
Maria asked.
So it's not fair that they had two mages and—
Stop! If this is what you're going to bet on, then I'll show you. Your stats are better than mine, aren't they?
Maria nodded. In fact, compared to Nick, who had only gotten his stat bonuses through training, Maria had nearly 100 more points in strength, agility, and constitution than he did. This was further amplified by the fact that her achievements gave her a +1 bonus to all stats, thanks to how broken the hero class was, while his only kept giving him charisma bonuses. Even before Nick factored in how his strength was halved thanks to Mephisto's choking clutch, she already had practically double his stats.
And you have combat abilities from your class, right? Ones that vastly outpace any basic skills I've managed to learn. Right? Nick pressed.
Yeah.
Maria agreed wearily. Good. Then if I beat Spencer and Adele's team with the same teammates you had, will you admit that it's your fault? Nick asked.
This caused everyone in the group, who was already tense from the awkwardness of Nick and Maria arguing, to go become completely still as they all stared at Nick. Adele and Spencer looked more than a little worried.
I don't think it's necessary to go that far, Spencer opined.
I think it is, Nick insisted.
I think that until she sees it for herself, she will never understand.
What did I miss?
Sioa asked as she joined them at the table, her plate stacked 3 or 4 inches high with gochujang covered bulgogi and tteokbokki. She had spent the morning training with Stacy, so she hadn't been a part of the training that the others were doing in the team skirmishes.
Nick is bullying our poor Maria,
Adele said, faking a pout as she put an arm over Maria's shoulder.
Our poor hero is being harassed by the big bad guy.
Indeed. He's playing the villain for sure, Spencer replied to Adele before turning to Sioa. You need to tell him to call off this latest—
Nope.
Sioa interrupted, shooting that down as she mimicked Adele, putting an arm over Nick's shoulder as she gave him an awkward sideways hug.
I wasn't there, so I'm not taking any side. If Nick is doing something mean, I'm sure it's for a good reason. We all know how high his hopes are for Maria, and we all know how important this beginner's raid is. We can't have anything go wrong.
Well, considering Mr. Walters and Arnold are both going to be there to supervise and make sure nothing goes wrong, it shouldn't be that serious, Spencer remarked with a shrug, taking a bite of his roast beef and cheddar sandwich.
But you need to treat it like it is,
Sioa countered.
If we don't learn to tackle these now, we'll never be ready for the horrendous monsters we may have to face tomorrow.
Then why isn't Nick leading it?
Adele asked, biting her lip a moment as she looked at Maria. It was clear she wanted to say more, but she didn't want to offend her friend in the process.
Because it's like Sioa said, Nick replied. Up until today, I had a lot of faith in Maria. I thought she would be the one to lead the younger generation.
Why are you saying younger generation like that. We're the same age.
Adele objected.
Oh, don't you know? Nick is actually 1,000 years old. He is an immortal that has been reincarnated from a foreign world after dying a grisly death, saving someone from being killed in a car accident. Spencer quipped, making up a random story. Adele laughed.
Like an anime? Nick, did you get isekai'd? Did you die from truck-kun and reincarnate as the heir to a fortune?
Well, he's not fully wrong about me being older, Nick thought, quietly laughing a little at the joke before just eating his food. He did note one thing, though. Adele was also right. He needed to be careful with his language. There was no way he was going to keep his secret about time traveling if he accidentally dropped hint after hint while talking to people. Sioa had figured out his story without him even saying anything, so it wasn't unreasonable that someone else might uncover the truth as well. After lunch, everyone went back outside, and Nick waved to Sioa as he, Adele, and Spencer went onto the field. Sioa and Maria took up spectator positions in the spot that Spencer and Nick had been in earlier when first watching Maria.
Please go easy on us,
Adele pleaded before the two groups broke off into their own pre-battle strategy meetings. Nick gathered the group of four that Maria had been teamed up with. He'd met all of them when they first joined the guild, but hadn't had a chance to really get to know them yet, much less understand their fighting styles. He knew he was using a skill that Maria didn't have, so it wasn't entirely fair. But as he activated his Omni-Trainer's insight, he justified it as a faster equivalent to conversations Maria could have had with these people to get the same info.
I wonder what mine would look like, he wondered as he stared at the first person's Omni-Trainer notes.
Andrea. Agile and precise, Andrea relies on swift movements and either a shield or collection of knives to strike her foes. Her background as a former sprinter enhances her speed and reflexes, making her a formidable and elusive opponent. Insight notes. While athletic overall, Andrea has an especially strong lower half. This, combined with her high agility, will allow her to more easily brace herself against attacks from taller enemies, striking down at her position. This can be further improved to truly highlight her defensive capabilities. Warning: Andrea's overcompetitive need to be the best in everything she does might result in body dysmorphia, and overworking herself if emotional validation recognizing small gains is not regularly given to offset the currently low position she holds within her field.
The rest were just as the first one, beautiful little cheat sheets. They described in detail how Tabitha excelled in using swords and shields, but her combat style was focused on defense, and how Jo, while lacking in the defense that Tabitha specialized in, was good at powerful area of effects like cleave. Lastly, the spearman, Daryl, was a former baseball player that could use improvised weapons far better than most. Some of the info was stuff he had already picked up from watching Maria's skirmishes, things that she, as their leader, had failed to even bother finding out. These facts she had left undiscovered would help Nick win in the upcoming battle, and he immediately formed a plan upon reading them. I apologize that, as your guild leader and the representative of Daedalus, we haven't had a chance to speak much. But I want you all to know that it isn't because I have ignored you. Rather, I have observed each and every one of you since you first joined this guild, and it will be my honor to fight alongside you in the skirmish ahead, Nick said, deciding to play off his knowledge of all their abilities as things he'd already observed about them, despite the fact they hadn't really been able to show off all their talents in the recent skirmishes. Then he laid out his plan for the upcoming battle. Andrea nodded eagerly.
That's great. I'll finally get to get into the fight properly.
Daryl didn't seem as enthusiastic.
Are you sure about this? Shouldn't I focus on my actual weapon skills?
Nick laid a hand on his shoulder.
Yeah, it's fine, Daryl. I trust you. Now you just need to trust yourself. We're going to do great. And we're going to win as a team.
Daryl nodded.
Are you guys going to stand there all day, or are we going to practice?
One of the spearmen from Spencer's group taunted from across the field. Nick grinned, and the group got ready.
A horn sounded, marking the start of the practice round. Spencer and Adele immediately started casting, and at this point in the previous fights, Maria had already taken off at a sprint toward the two. However, Nick had a different plan. His group turned and ran away.
Hey, what are they doing? They can't do that, can they?
One of the spearmen asked.
Nick chuckled at the question. He knew some people would see running away as unheroic, but why would you stay where the enemy mages could see you? Besides, he had a plan, and his team followed him as they ran over a hill and circled around through the trees that spotted the mountain. He could hear shouts of "coward" and "that's not fair," but his team never stopped moving. When they found a line of sight back to their opposing team, Nick saw that Spencer and Adele had stopped their magical casting since they had no one to target. Nick turned back to his team. "All right, just stick to the plan, and we'll come out of this just fine." Daryl nodded as he and Andrea went off, leaving Nick, Tabitha, and Joe. The remaining three equipped their gear and walked out of the tree line into the clearing. They were spotted in seconds, but that too was part of the plan, with the three breaking into a sprint, shields up. Nick heard the chants before he saw Spencer's hands moving to cast a spell, and Nick shouted, "Split!" Instantaneously, the two other fighters veered off to the left and right using their speed-enhancing abilities, and the next moment Nick felt an extreme chill surround him. Icy manacles formed around his wrists and ankles, stopping him in his tracks. Tabitha and Joe charged Spencer from opposite sides, but their spearmen had already formed a protective ring around him and Adele and met the two in a clash of weapons. Nick had to smile as he dropped his shield and spun his long spear in a wide circle, increasing its weight to its maximum capability as he brought it down on the ice chains that held him in place. With a crack, one of the chains broke, and even at a distance Nick could see Spencer reinforcing the magic as his hands glowed brighter. But at the next moment, a fist-sized rock whistled through the air and hit Spencer right in the center of his back, knocking him forward a step and disrupting his next spell. Spencer staggered from the magical feedback caused by the incomplete cast, and Adele was beside him trying to help. Yet Andrea appeared in a blurred charge from the forest line behind them, a wooden practice knife plunging into Adele as she tackled her to the ground, killing her. Adele cursed as she lay there, but Andrea wasn't finished as she rolled off the woman and went for Spencer. The mage had seen her, however, and raised his hands, ice needles already forming and ready to launch, when another rock zipped through the air at his head. Spencer instinctively ducked, and although it was only a moment's distraction, it was enough for Andrea to close the distance to him and stab him in the groin, then across his stomach, and finally press the tip of her wooden knife to his neck in a single smooth motion. With the mage down, Nick's icy shackles disappeared, and then it was a fight of 5 against 3. The spearmen tried to defend themselves, their backs to each other, but Nick had fought minotaurs that tried the same tactics, and they had fallen too. Nick charged forward, swiftly closing the distance between himself and the spearmen, his spear poised for a deadly strike. The first of the three, a burly man with a scarred face, lunged, thrusting his weapon at Nick's heart. With lightning-fast reflexes, Nick sidestepped the attack, narrowly avoiding a losing blow. As the scarred spearman stumbled forward, off balance from his missed strike, Nick seized the opportunity. In a fluid of motion, he swung his spear low and swept his opponent's legs out from under him. The spearman crashed to the ground, momentarily stunned by the impact. Before he had a chance to recover, Nick tapped his spear into the man's chest, ending his time in the match. Tabitha and Joe focused on the other two spearmen, their shields allowing them to deflect their opponent's spear thrusts while they closed the distance, Daryl's thrown rocks a constant distraction to the spearmen. Once she was in range, Tabitha twirled her blade, the glint of steel reflecting in her eyes as she expertly parried her opponent's spear and delivered a swift blow to his chest. Joe's opponent fell to Andrea's knife as she was able to sneak behind the distracted spearman and stab him in the back, dropping the last opponent.
"It worked!"
Daryl shouted as he came out of the tree line.
"It did! We won!"
Andrea cheered as the rest of the group celebrated their victory.
"Congratulations," Spencer said with a smile as he rose from where he'd fallen in the practice fight and dusted off his clothes. The two teams shook hands, chatted about mistakes they made, and exchanged friendly jabs. But verbally, this time.
Chapter 4.
Having done his best to show her where she was failing, Nick looked over at Maria, who was standing with Sioha, her arms folded, frowning.
"You see?"
Maria's face flushed with embarrassment as Nick called around.
"That's... you can't do that again! They'll know it's coming!"
Nick chuckled. As frustrated as he was with her trying to discount the lesson, he understood where she was coming from. She was having a hard time, running into a wall and finding out that the thing she prided herself most in was something she wasn't doing correctly. Her ego was invested in her skills as a fighter, and her abilities as a dungeon diver.
Fine. Let's go again.
Do you mind? Nick asked Spencer and Adele, who both seemed reticent, exchanging a glance with each other and Maria.
Okay, one more time won't hurt,
Adele finally said, giving Nick a resolute nod.
Speak for yourself, Spencer grumbled, rubbing his back. That rock hurt.
Spencer, you're a strong guy with an even stronger will. I know you can handle this. Just think of it as preparing yourself for the unexpected in a real battle. A rock upsetting your rhythm in a skirmish is fine, but what if it's an arrow hitting you, or a piece of stalactite falling on you while we're fighting a massive monster? You need to prepare yourself to press through those types of things, Nick advised.
Ah. Yes. Of course, Spencer nodded.
It's always best to just listen to the boss man,
Adele chirped, beaming.
He'll always take care of us best.
Adele's remarks seemed weird to Nick as he took his place on the other side of the field, preparing to enter the fight again.
Are we seriously going to have to do another 5 versus 5? Didn't we already win? Daryl grumbled.
Yeah, and didn't it feel good?
Andrea countered.
We showed them that we didn't suck, we just didn't have the right leader.
Careful saying that too loudly. She's going to be back in charge of the squad when I'm not around, Nick warned, checking to make sure Maria was far enough away that she didn't hear Andrea's comment.
Right, right.
Andrea replied quietly.
We're all on the same team here, so just remember that when you speak, Nick reminded them as they reached their spot and turned around to face Spencer and the others and then organize into a formation.
So, same plan as last time? Joe asked, looking as eager as Andrea to execute the plan and win again.
Nope, Nick shook his head this time. He had fought with them before, he knew how they operated now, and he had faith in their abilities.
We're just going to go in shields up but moving fast and hard. If you see anyone get hit with a snare or a debuff from Spencer or Adele, help them out. It's 5-on-3 if we can mitigate their abilities. I'll call out the strategies. If I say pause, hold the line and don't advance. If I say flash, close your eyes. If I call someone's name, that means they're snared, and you need to remove it as fast as possible. As for the rest of my commands, just match my pace when I say go and rush when I say rush. Follow these instructions, and we'll win. Got it?
Got it!
The group echoed, each equipping their shields. From the way they agreed, he could tell they now had faith in him, too. And in themselves. They were hesitant at the start of the first round because they'd lost so many times with Maria, but after seeing that they could win, after tasting victory, they now had their confidence back.
Hey! None of that planning! Just come at us!
Spencer yelled, clearly not liking the idea of Nick planning out another engagement.
I will. Straight to you, Nick assured them. Then come on!
Spencer beckoned, but there was no follow-up taunt from the other members this time.
Go!
Nick said, standing in the middle of the 5-person formation as they advanced steadily toward the enemy, each of them holding their shields anxiously as they prepared for whatever spell or trick Spencer and Adele were going to throw at them this time. However, even after entering the range of Spencer's magic, he didn't do anything right away. Instead, they were able to get quite close before Adele raised up her hand, light channeling through it, ready to explode.
Flash! Pause!
Nick warned, recognizing the flash just in time. They only had a second from Nick's announcement to close their eyes, shielding them as best they could before Adele's light explosion turned the back of Nick's eyelids a solid red with its extreme brightness. Opening his eyes the second the eyelid illuminating light was gone, Nick cried,
"We're good! Go!"
And the 5 continued their march, now no more than 20 feet away from the enemies. It was at this point that Spencer's ice chain ability reached up from the ground, binding Daryl, who was on Nick's right, wrapping around his arms and legs and pinning him in place.
"Pause! Daryl!"
Nick called out the orders, turning and chopping the frigid chains that had bound his companion with his weighted spear, while Joe, who was on the other side of Daryl, did the same. Didn't want to get hit with another rock that badly, Nick thought, having to suppress a laugh as he realized why Spencer had chosen Daryl instead of anyone else.
"Go!"
Nick ordered again, this time barely 15 feet away as they marched a little faster. 10 feet away, he could see Adele and Spencer hard at work preparing to cast more spells to make up for the ones that already failed. But he wasn't going to let that stop them this time.
"Rush!"
Nick commanded, and that 10 feet between them and the 3 fighters protecting the 2 casters shrank in an instant,
Andrea, with her strong legs and fast sprinting ability, reached the enemies first, smashing into them with her shield as she bowled one of them over completely. Joe, who was on the far end, crashed in a second later with a spinning cleave attack that struck the now partnerless right flank in the back, eliminating him instantly. Tabitha didn't do much extra besides occupy the left flank member, the last standing member of the enemy shield wall. With the three either engaged, eliminated, or grounded, Daryl and Nick had a clear path to Adele and Spencer behind them. As Daryl thrust out his spear to attack, Adele's hands moved in a blur as she finished her chant.
"Me!"
Nick called, seeing Adele's final spell manifest. A large, ethereal hammer of light aimed right at him and threatening to smash him into the dirt. No sooner did he alert his team to the issue than Andrea shot forward and into the sky, her shield crashing into the hammer before it could even begin its downward swing, the collision destroying the spell. This left Nick with enough time to finish off Adele, lunging the remaining distance, knocking her over, and raising his weapon to her throat as he mounted the grounded woman.
"Oh my! Be careful with that spear, Senpai!"
Adele muttered breathlessly.
"You win!"
Spencer said behind her, Daryl's practice spear touching his chest. This time, as he turned to Maria, who was still watching from the sidelines, Nick could tell that she had given up. The defeat was clear. There was nothing she could do to deny it. He hadn't used a fancy new plan. He hadn't used any tricks. They hadn't even bothered with ranged attacks. It was a clear, clean, beautiful sweep of the group.
"Do you yield as well?"
Nick asked Maria, whose pouting expression showed he didn't even need a verbal confirmation.
I don't get it. Why couldn't I do that?"
Maria asked, looking like she was about to cry. She stared at the overwhelming victory Nick had pulled off with the same team she'd lost with repeatedly.
"Because you weren't fighting 5-on-5 when you fought. You were challenging them 1-on-5. Unless you are overwhelmingly more powerful than the other team, 5 will always win against 1.
That's just how it works," Nick explained as he stood up and extended a hand toward Adele.
But I had a team too."
"But did you use them? Were you organized? When you were chained by Spencer's magic, who was close enough to save you? When you were blinded by Adele's spells, who was there to block an attack for you? You challenged them alone, and so you lost alone," Nick explained.
"If you continue to try to grow on your own and ignore your team, then you're going to continue to have serious issues."
"Yes, sir,"
Maria responded, nodding solemnly. She then turned to her team and said,
"I'm sorry."
"Well, don't worry about it too much. The schools teach you formations and teamwork, but then they always force you to learn and do everything on your own, and the setting is too controlled. You probably never got to see, feel, and really understand working as a team in a fight. This is your first year, and this is your first guild. Take it slow. And make sure you just learn the proper techniques from the beginning," Nick told her, walking over to her and patting her on the back.
"I have faith you can do this."
"Thank you,"
she said, letting out a breath she had been holding.
"You can train me with that expert technique of yours, too,"
Siowa snickered. Nick nodded.
"Well, we need to start training for the beginner's raid, and this will be a good chance to start on tank rotations."
"On what?"
Maria blinked. "Tank rotations." Nick looked over at her, wondering what they actually taught in their school. But as he saw Siowa looking a little confused herself, like she knew the concept but wasn't positive she had it right, he decided maybe it was just the education system in general.
"All right, fine. We were going to have to start with the basics anyway. Tank swapping is a perfectly fine place to start. Do you just swap out who tanks? Is it just that simple?"
Spencer asked.
"No, it's a lot more than that," Nick said. "It's about controlling the focus of the monster, knowing how tough you are, knowing how fast you're going to be healed, and knowing when and how strong the boss's next attack is going to be."
"How can you know the boss's next attack?"
Andrea asked.
"Not like they're video game characters with pre-built patterns. There's no way we can know what they're going to do."
"You've done a lot of one-on-one sparring before, though, right?" Nick asked Andrea.
"Yeah, of course. It's a requirement to even get registered properly as an adventurer,"
Andrea reminded him.
"Okay, then," Nick continued. "And when you're fighting one-on-one with someone, How often do they break out new or special moves? How many times do they really attack you without forecasting what they're going to do?
Never. It's always forecasted. You can tell by their weapon and their stance and their outfit what they're most likely...
Andrea paused, realizing what Nick was saying.
Yep.
Nick nodded as he saw her figure it out. Bosses are the same. They're also often very large, so their attacks tend to be telegraphed that much more clearly. You just need to be observant.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Andrea replied, nodding along with Nick's explanation.
So basically, tank swapping is just trading who has the boss's focus. You do this so that whenever the boss lands a blow, it doesn't kill the person who got hit. If you trade who was getting attacked at just the right time, then the tank drawing in the monster's aggression will always have enough health to handle the hits, Nick told her.
Okay, that sounds easy,
Andrea said, seeming to agree with everything she was being told.
Sounds easy, but it isn't,
Siola remarked.
If you don't do it right or aren't careful about when you do it, then you can get everyone killed.
It's an advanced technique. But like all things in life, training and practice are the answer. We'll work and work until we get the motions right, Nick explained. But we'll take it one step at a time. First off, how about you raise your hand if you think you've got what it takes to be the tank, to be the defensive backbone of a guild raid?
At this, only two people raised their hands, both people from Spencer's team. Andrea looked particularly confused.
But I'm a fast fighter. I rely on my...
Legs, Nick interjected.
You rely on your powerful legs. Don't forget that, with muscles like those, you can absorb more hits, dodge more blows, and reach the party members that need your help in an instant. You're perfect for being a tank. Just think of how much you saved me earlier when Adele's spiritual weapon was coming straight for me.
Nick knew he was asking a lot from her. The tall, muscular woman would absolutely rebel against being told, hey, you're playing the wrong class, you would do way better playing differently, by anyone else. The least he could do was be nice about it.
I guess I could try tanking more seriously,
Andrea said, looking to the others, who were patting her on the back and nodding in approval of her attempt to try.
Good. Then how about we do just that for the first set of exercises? We can go to the Winter Tombs dungeon since I need to pick up Sab, and while we're there, you three can practice trading a monster's aggro. We can start with a small, simple, easy-to-kill monster. And once you get the hang of juggling who it is focused on and communicating with each other, we can move to something bigger.
Baby steps, Nick said, assuring the group.
What about us, then? Spencer asked. I don't think I can tank well enough to practice with them.
Well, that's the fun part. You're going to have to learn to fight a monster without drawing any of its attention. If you heal too fast, if you attack too quickly, if you do something like cast a blinding flash that annoys it too much, it's going to come for you. You need to be able to understand what is going to cause a monster to attack you, since if that happens, if one of the giant bosses hits you, and you aren't wearing defensive gear, you don't have a shield, and you don't have any skills to help you mitigate that blow, you're going to die.
Well, that sounds fun. Glad we have a game plan put together,
Sioma said, her expression bright as she was clearly ready to go tackle the dungeon and get some training in. Not to mention, due to the fact they would be training in a dungeon, everyone would be getting experience and levels, something most training sessions didn't include. However, before they could leave, Nick's phone rang. It was Elizabeth, so he picked it up right away, wondering what would cause her to call him when she was training in the building and would normally just need to step outside to find him.
Nick, it's your family,
Elizabeth said the moment he picked up the phone.
Oh, my parents are here.
That's unexpected. I didn't know they missed me enough to come all the way out here for me. Tell them to wait there and I'll...
No, not your parents. Your cousins. Some girl by the name of Rosemary wants to see you, and she's with an Isolde, who insists on being called Lady, and, Seraphina,
Elizabeth clarified, causing Nick's expression to instantly falter as he tried to process what could bring the sly fox this far out.
Also, I think Alan is distracting them, but they're very insistent on seeing you right away. Do you want me to see them off?
No. I need to find out what they want, Nick grumbled. He didn't want to do it, but he knew he had to. Just set them up somewhere and make them some tea.
I'll come handle it.
You sure? I'm serious. I have no problem tossing them out. I bet I could reach a new javelin throw record with that beanpole Serafina. Oh, she'd be fun to launch.
Elizabeth insisted. No, it's fine. I'll come handle it, Nick replied.
I thought we were going to a dungeon. What's going on?
Siowa asked as she looked at Nick. My cousins are here, and they're being extra pushy. I think I need to go deal with them, Nick shook his head. I don't want to, though.
Then you should just tell Elizabeth to toss them out,
Siowa suggested. Great minds, Nick laughed, and then took a deep breath. How about you take charge of this trip? Make sure Maria and everyone is following the rules they're meant to follow, and I'll come join you guys afterward. You're just as good at teaching formations as I am.
Okay. But if you need me, just give me a call. I'll turn the car around right away, or, well, Will will turn the car around right away. But I'll tell him to do it,
Siowa said, before giving him a peck on the cheek and heading off with the others, leaving Nick alone to face whatever annoying drama awaited him. Chapter 5. As Nick stepped into the office where his cousins were waiting, he could almost physically feel the chilly atmosphere in the room. Even though Nick only knew the three women by name, he hardly recognized them as he entered the room. He had seen Isolde and Serafina only from a distance at the graduation ceremony and only Rosemary in passing in the hallway, but seeing them up close now, where he had the opportunity to study them, allowed him to notice just how sharply they contrasted with their older versions in his last life. He remembered Rosemary's silver hair turned gray by the stress of her trying to hold her family's reputation together, and her face marred with wrinkles and crow's feet. The fact she neither dyed her hair nor used makeup to cover her wrinkles was something he had admired about her. She was no Maria, but she was a leader, albeit a deadly, calculating, and ruthless one. Serafina was just as changed, too. Though her hair stayed raven black no matter how old she got in his last life, the shimmer in her eyes had dulled to a listless, empty gaze, and her face had become withered and hollow. He remembered that once or twice she had come to find him after he had been disowned, and she had tried to offer help, but it was his last meeting with her that he remembered most clearly. When Grandfather Gallows passed away and the Gallows family fell to the mobs and Evan and the others had their heads displayed upon the spikes of the fence that once defended them, she had sought Nick out. She looked like she had wanted to say something, but all she did was put a hand on his shoulder and then stared at him creepily until Isabel, coming home from another dungeon raid, interrupted the moment. As for Isolde, he had run into her infrequently in his last life. Following the Red Death, there were no tourists to the cities, much less people traveling in from across the ocean. It was one of the reasons he had been able to even enter college with his horrible final grades and terrible condition. The dungeons needed bodies, and so long as one was willing to sign up for weekly dungeon raids, anyone could get into college.
You're a lot quieter than I thought you'd be,
Isolde said as she stood up from the long table in Nick's office and walked over to him.
In case you've forgotten who I am, it's me, your cousin, Lady Isolde. I'm the pretty one.
Charming, Nick said, not wanting to ruffle feathers as he took her hand. I hope you're not too upset about me missing our lunch appointment. Would you prefer tea or coffee?
I'd like some dark coffee. I think we will hold off on refreshments here,
Rosemary interjected, quickly cutting off Serafina before she could accept a beverage, likely not trusting Nick after he had returned Evan's poisonous hand.
I'll have an iced caramel macchiato with whipped cream and chocolate on top,
Isolde announced, ignoring Rosemary's concern.
Also, if you have one of those little butter-heavy biscuits with the chocolate filling, that would be wonderful.
Butter-heavy biscuits? You mean cookies? Nick asked, raising an eyebrow in confusion for a moment as he remembered to parse the difference between British and American English.
Oh, right. Yanks,
Isolde scoffed.
Whatever, just those drinks will do fine. And also, if you'd be so kind, I'd love a cube or two of sugar to go with the drink.
I can offer you coffee, tea, or a patented Guild-exclusive protein shake, Nick counteroffered. I recommend the protein shake. Thanks to the syrup we use, it's both incredibly sweet and will help you out immensely.
Fine, but I'd still like a cookie to go with it,
Isolde shrugged, taking a seat. Nick couldn't help but notice that not only did Rosemary or Serafina pass up the drink offer, but they also didn't even stand. While he could have forgiven Serafina, she was likely just copying what Isolde was doing, the slight from Rosemary was clearly intended.
She was someone who wouldn't forget manners even if she forgot everything else.
If it's that uncomfortable for you two to come here, then why even show? Nick asked as he sent a text for the drinks and a cookie to Emmy, who was currently working the refreshment bar for the gym.
It's not uncomfortable,
Rosemary answered, looking over at Isolde.
I'm just surprised my cousin here would accept a drink from you after the incident with Evan.
You mean where he was poisoned? Nick asked, as Emmy showed up so quickly it was as if she had the shakes pre-made and presented the two drinks and cookies to Nick, who passed half to Isolde.
Yes, I remember that. It's a real shame what happened.
Are you going to act like you didn't poison him yourself?
Rosemary scoffed, but there was something about her expression that felt a little off to Nick. It caused him to lean back as he tried to place exactly what had gotten under her skin.
I had nothing to do with his poisoning either time, Nick insisted. Though I'm aware of how he ended up with the same condition that I have, it was entirely Catherine's doing, not mine. I never once touched the substance. As for his death during the tournament, surely you don't believe I would use something that fast-acting, do you? The only one who would have benefited from him dying during or after our fight would be someone trying to frame me.
A very convenient excuse, Nick,
Rosemary replied, frowning. This time, though, the expression was much clearer to Nick. It was revulsion. The subject was causing physical discomfort for her. The more he talked about Evan, the more it became clear she was suppressing her reaction. For someone who Nick knew was more than capable of controlling her expressions, this struck Nick as incredibly odd.
Yes, an excuse, Nick said with a shrug as he studied her. I do wonder who would have killed Evan. Can you imagine the reason either?